97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, welcome to the Mark Reardon Show. And Brad Young sitting in today. I got to sit here with the cool kids on Monday. I get to be here today. And also, Mark will be back tomorrow. So stick around, wake the kids, phone the neighbors. Mark will be back here in the big chair. That would be tomorrow.
Boy, and you know what he told me? He's been texting me and emailing me all day long.
Yes.
Because he's on the flight back, I guess, from Greece with ideas and guests. And he either he has ideas for like 100 guests for tomorrow, or he said no guests. He could just talk the whole show about everything he's seen and heard while he's been gone.
Oh, wow.
So it's going to be especially on media coverage of the United States.
Interesting.
Yeah.
From overseas.
Right.
And he's going to have some comments on how they cover the White House,
and how
they cover American
President
politics.
Trump and American politics. Yeah.
Wow. That is a must listen. That'll be tomorrow. It doesn't mean you turn it off today, though. It's not like, oh, Mark's going to be back tomorrow. I can turn off this bald-headed lawyer, and I don't need to listen to that guy.
It's radio. They don't need to know that.
I know they don't need to know that, but listen, I don't make no secret. I'm follically challenged. That's okay. As I like to tell folks, look it up. It's medical science. It's science that baldness is caused by too much testosterone. So, you know, I'm sorry I have excessive testosterone. I'm very, very sorry for that. But we're not going to dive in. That might be a TMI. We're not going to do any drug testing here in the office or in the studio today. But we do, of course, have, as you just heard, Hall of Famer Fred Bottomer. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
And, of course, Sue, we couldn't do the show without Sue Thomas.
Hi.
Good to talk
Hello.
To you.
Hello.
I know. Hello. Yeah, they. It's springtime, isn't it, Sue?
Oh, it is. And believe me.
And springtime brings allergies.
Oh, what didn't occur to me?
Oh, okay.
I was thinking more that the HVAC guy came out today and looked at the air conditioning thing and said I need to get some of the mint away from it. I've got too much plants life growing around the thing. You know what I mean? The
oh, condenser. Sure.
Yeah.
That,
yeah, it's spring.
It is spring. Yeah, I know. I spent the weekend digging up honeysuckle stuff out of my yard. My wife wants it all gone.
That stuff is evil.
It is evil, and unfortunately, I don't have the knees to be digging in the yard. But you know what? When the wife says we need to dig up the honeysuckle, my question is just how many honeysuckle bushes do you want me to dig up, honey?
Are you saying that testosterone isn't just carrying you right out the door?
Well, it does, but the knees kind of buckle after a while.
I see. All right.
Yeah, so, do it like I do. You take a chair out there and you sit on the chair.
Oh, yeah, that looks
you
good.
Do it. I know. It's a good look.
Oh, that's a good look. Yeah, I think I'll try to skip that look. I'd rather take some ibuprofen and get busy. But talking about getting busy here, Trump wants to reopen Alcatraz, and I want to mention this for just a moment because I think there's some gold here that can be mined. But he wants to open up Alcatraz, and according to President Trump yesterday, it can be done. I mean, it's federal property, right? There's no reason why it cannot be opened legally. But the question is, it's in kind of rough shape, and I understand, Mr. Bottomer, you've actually been to Alcatraz. Was that as a prisoner, or was that as a guest?
That was
as a visitor.
That's
so you weren't
after
like sent there?
No.
Oh, okay. When you said you'd been in Alcatraz, I thought maybe it was, you know, those multiple felonies. I wasn't sure.
I didn't take that tour. I assume that's when you were in San Francisco. Was it cool?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was really neat. I went with my wife, Marie, and our two sons, Shane and Noah. And we, you know, took the boat, you know, over from the mainland onto Alcatraz and toured the entire thing. It really is run down. But there are just certain things that impress you when you see it. First, how big it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can stand there and just look toward the shore and see how far away that is. And you can see the water. And you just think, how could anyone even attempt to escape from this?
Yeah, it looks really far away when you look at it from land.
Yeah, and when you walk on the inside, it's just huge, and the cells are really in bad shape. But of course, I mean, I don't think anybody thought they were going to reopen it, so you kind of let it go.
Right.
Except for the one cell that they put a dummy in there and make it look like it's still an active cell.
Right.
Which was kind of cool.
Have you ever seen the Clint Eastwood movie Escape from Alcatraz?
No.
Oh, you got it. It's one of my favorite movies. You got to watch that movie. And it's the story of Frank, and his last name escapes me at the moment, the one guy who is alleged to maybe have escaped.
That's right.
It's not ever been confirmed. In fact, they found some clothing that was ripped up, and they assumed that he didn't make it. But he used the trick, and they did this, replicated it in the movie, where he did the trick where he made a papier-mâché dummy head and then put it on the pillow and then put the covers up so it looked like he was sleeping. And then he, you know, he dug his way out and got out that way and built a life raft out of raincoats and glue. And he glued together a life raft to get across the channel. Now, again, there's no proof that he made it. There's no proof that he didn't. So the federal officials say no one's ever escaped because there's no proof that he did. You like to think that maybe he did. Excuse me, but we don't know. But from but did they try to replicate that with a dummy in the bed?
I think that might have been the dummy that I saw. I might have seen, you know, a fake head on a pillow. I think they might have been recreating that scene.
Right. Oh, you need to see that movie. It's a great movie. But all I know about Alcatraz comes from watching the Clint Eastwood movie, Escape from Alcatraz, and also the Nicolas Cage, Sean Connery.
That's right. The
movie,
Rock.
The Rock.
I'm sorry. The Rock.
The Rock.
Yes.
Yeah. Shaken, not stirred.
And Ed Harris. Ed Harris was in that.
He was in that movie. And there's absolutely nothing about that movie that's believable, including Sean Connery's hair. But again, we're coming back to hair. I'm very sorry. But those two movies, that's all I know about Alcatraz. I've never been there. So I would really like you to see one of those movies to see how accurate, not the accurate of the whole movie, but accurate in terms of its portrayal of Alcatraz. But if either of you could send someone to Alcatraz, whom would it be?
This is a good question.
Is
I
it?
Like this question.
Oh,
yeah.
Ethan, go right ahead.
Well, I like the question. I got to process who do I not like enough to send to the most famous prison in the world.
See, while you're thinking about it, I've got a couple of ideas.
Let's hear it.
Number one, I'd like to send the entire cast of The View.
Ooh,
to Alcatraz.
That's a good one.
All right. Because that's where they need to be. And I don't even know who this is, but the guy, whoever the guy is, I'm assuming it's a guy, who invented multi-factor authentication for computers. I want him to go to Alcatraz. Because about a third of the time I'm trying to get into my computer, the MFA doesn't work. Then I can't get on my computer. I can't do work. And during those times, I wish that guy needs to be in Alcatraz. So
I think that guy's probably protecting you from, bad people on the interwebs getting into your company.
I know, but that's a possibility of a bad guy. But the reality is I fight with it all the time. So I'm sure his intentions were good, Sue. I know you try to see the good things in life.
I bet that there's probably some Cardinal fans out there that would say John Mozeliak.
I'm sure that you would find a lot.
Or hockey fans who would say any member of the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yep. Yeah.
Any one of them, especially the guy that scored a goal with
Adam Lowry.
1.6 seconds left.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I know my son-in-law is a big Star Wars fan, and he would like to see Kathleen Kennedy be in Alcatraz for messing up all the Star Wars movies.
Because you're going to have to explain who that was, Kathleen Kennedy
Kathleen
was.
Kennedy
the
is...
The way Fred's looking at it.
Right, yeah, sorry. Kathleen Kennedy is the one who's overseeing Star Wars when they came out with the newest set of movies.
Okay.
And all of the ways that the new movies have in the minds of true Star Wars fans, which I enjoy Star Wars, but I'm not a nut about it. They say that the newest movies screwed everything up. It ruined the Star Wars universe.
She got fired, didn't she? She's no longer. I don't think she's.
No, she's not overseeing that. I don't know that she got fired. I think she.
But she's
retired.
Just not over that specifically. Okay,
I think she retired from that.
Okay.
But Star Wars fans give her the blame for screwing up Star Wars movies.
As they should.
So, if you don't have any other ideas on who should go to Alcatraz, I do got another story that I want your opinion on, because restaurants, fast food restaurants, get sued all of the time. All right. We all know, everybody knows of the infamous case where a lady had hot coffee spilled on her and sued. And the story goes she got $10 million. And that's true. However, when it went up on appeal, and everybody forgets this part of the story, when the case went up on appeal, it got reversed because of errors at the trial court, and it eventually settled for, I think, $10,000 or $20,000. So the lady who got $10 million bucks or $1 million bucks or whatever, it was in the millions, for the spilt coffee really didn't do that well.
Okay, so as an attorney, tell me this. What happens if you get that money and you spend it real fast? And then they pull it back.
Well, you don't get the money. See, they don't pay you the money while a case is on appeal.
Gotcha.
Okay.
So what happens is if, for example, if McDonald's got hit for $10 million and then they file an appeal, they don't have to give her the money now. They don't have to give any money until all appeals are exhausted. So she never got the $10 million. She got nothing until all the appeals were exhausted. And then at that point, again, I think it was $10,000, $20,000 that she ultimately walked away with. Plus, she had to pay a third of that in attorney's fees, plus court costs. So at the end of the day,
she made a few thousand dollars.
She probably got a couple of free cups of coffee at McDonald's. You know, that's what she walked away with. But there's all kinds of lawsuits that get filed against fast food restaurants. Subway got sued last year or the year before because someone measured their foot-long sandwiches and said they were only 11 inches long, so they filed a class action lawsuit against Subway saying your foot-long sandwiches are not a foot long, and that got dismissed. So all these cases get dismissed, but what's interesting is a judge yesterday is allowing a lawsuit over Burger King Whopper ads to move forward, and the issue is this. When you see fast food restaurant commercials, that food looks so good, doesn't it? I mean, the great big juicy patties and the perfectly rounded tomatoes and the pickles that are just right and the bun is nice and fluffy. And then when you get the sandwich, it looks nothing like what you see on the ads.
Right. You know, I met a food photographer.
Yes.
A year or so ago. And that's their job, to photograph food and make it look as yep. tasty as it can be.
They're a food stylist.
Oh, there yeah. it is.
It's a food stylist. My wife, actually, when she was in advertising, did some food styling for a grocery store chain that's no longer in St. Louis. I won't need to mention its name, but they're no longer here. And she was told to go make a turkey for Thanksgiving. And so she goes home and she makes this turkey and she brings it to work the next day. And her boss said, no, that's all wrong. You actually cooked it. You don't actually cook a turkey for an ad, because when you cook a turkey, you know, it breaks, it burns in places, it looks kind of nasty, it smells great. But for shooting purposes, you're only supposed to cook it for 30 minutes and then cover it with liquid smoke and shoe polish to make it look nice and brown. For the ads, okay?
Well, that makes sense, but wow.
So she actually cooked the turkey and didn't get in trouble, but they said, no, we're not using that. You really cooked it. Well, she didn't know. We also did an ad shoot in our basement at our house to make it look like a 50s malt shop one time. Because our basement at the time was fixed up like a 50s black and white checkered floor. We had booths, and I've got an old-time Coke machine.
That's cool.
And so we've actually done this.
But road trip for us.
But here's the reason why I bring this up. Going back, and this is what I thought of when I heard of this Burger King lawsuit, because going all the way back to 1968, there's a very famous ad agency called BBDO in New York, and they were doing the Campbell Soup commercials in the 60s. And the problem was, if you put a can of soup that's got all kinds of good stuff in it and you dump it in a bowl, what happens to the chunks of vegetables or meat or whatever it is that's in the soup? What happens? It sinks, right?
Yeah.
So if you're shooting it for a commercial, you can't really see the stuff that's in it. So this guy had an epiphany. He said, what if I put marbles in the bottom of the bowl? And I dump the soup on top of the marbles, all of the goodies in the soup will be pushed to the top. So when you shoot the TV commercial, it looks like it's bursting with vegetables and meat and all kinds of things. And the FTC sued them for false advertising, and you know they got spanked. But I'm thinking about all of the food commercials that we see and how rarely the stuff that we get when we order it looks anything remotely like what is eventually served when you order it. Now we're going to find out with Burger King. I suspect this case is going to get settled out of court, but a judge did refuse to dismiss the case, and it is now moving forward in the courts, and I'll be keeping track of that as it moves along. Hey, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we've all heard about the situation in Newark, New Jersey, not about the buried bodies. Everybody knows about the buried bodies in Newark, but I'm talking about the air traffic control tower. We're going to talk to Lieutenant Colonel Alan Bullitt Campbell. He's a retired pilot with the U.S. Air Force. We're going to talk to him about, is he worried that the Newark air traffic control system is going offline, and whether we should be concerned ourselves as travelers as we fly across the country. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon this afternoon. We'll be back right after this on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today, and I love talking all things aviation. It's one of my favorite topics. I mostly with military aircraft. I love military aircraft. I study them. I even bug my friends who work at Boeing, and they say, Brad, you're asking me questions I don't even know the answers to, because it's very interesting. And that's why I'm excited to talk to our next guest, Lieutenant Colonel Alan Bullitt Campbell, retired United States Air Force. Lieutenant Colonel Campbell, welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
Yeah, glad to be on with you.
Oh, it's great to talk to you, sir. And I've got a million questions for you. But before we dive into this topic, though, how did you get the nickname Bullitt? I always wonder how guys like you get their nicknames. How did you get Bullitt?
That's a fascinating question. My last name is Campbell, and I knew when I went in the Air Force, they'd call me Soupy. I mean, what is your other choice?
Right.
Catch up for something. So the movie had just come out. And Bullitt was a big shot. So I went in there. I told him, hey, my nickname is Bullitt. And it stuck. And it saved my day.
Right. Because that's the other thing. When I talk to guys I know who are pilots, usually the nicknames are kind of derogatory. And so I'm thinking, man, you've got the coolest nickname. I wonder how that happened. And you just gave it to yourself.
Yes, I did, from a movie.
Yeah,
the
Steve
timing
McQueen.
Was absolutely perfect.
Steve
yes,
McQueen. Oh, I know the movie. I know the car he was driving in that movie. A great driving car scene, car chase scene in Bullitt. Fantastic.
Right.
But, sir, I wanted to talk to you, and thanks for taking time out today. But I wanted to talk to you because we've all heard about this situation going on at Newark's Air Traffic Control Tower, where they actually lost the radar. Here's the actual audio from the control tower at Newark.
United 674, we lose radar contact lost. We lost our radar.
Do I have Bravo clearance?
No, you do not have a Bravo clearance. We lost our radar, and it's not working correctly. Radar service terminates, block VFR, green change approved. If you want a Bravo clearance, you can just call the towers when you get closer. We don't have a radar, so I don't know where you are.
Lieutenant Colonel Alan Bullitt Campbell, to walk us through, if in this situation, if the radar is essentially out at Newark, how did that impact the aircraft that were in the air right then that were on approach to Newark?
Well, it doesn't affect the pilots. If the weather is VFR, they can see each other and that sort of thing. If it had been instrument rules, it would have been tragic. But, you know, the pilots just do what they're told. They do the logical thing. They're just not allowed to land. And so, you know, it was only 90 seconds, but that's a busy airport. It's a busy area, three big airports in the New York area. And so it was just catastrophic almost immediately when that happened. And that they, you know, no accidents, no damage or anything was wonderful.
And when you say VFR, you mean visual flight rules, right?
That's correct. If it had been instrument flight rules, it would have been totally different.
Yes.
They would have had to told everybody, hold your altitude or give, but they can't see them. So there's a lot of guesswork. So the good weather was a miracle.
And is this anything that you've ever either experienced or heard about anecdotally before, where the air traffic control system would go down for a period of a minute or minutes?
No. I flew 37 years with Delta, and I never had any kind of a problem like that. I had one of the safest careers on the planet. But that's a busy, busy area. And so air traffic control is absolutely essential. And so, you know, I work worked for the FAA years ago, and they had a problem then, and they haven't fixed it. And the last administration under President Biden just kicked the can down the road. And so now the Trump administration has a horrific problem to fix. And of course, they're going to fix it, but it's going to take months or years to get it all straightened out.
Time and money. So tell me about this. You mentioned that over the past few years, including during the Biden administration, there were problems with the air traffic control system. Talk to us about what did these problems come from? How did they originate? And why are we having to deal with them now?
Well, they basically just kicked the can down the road in terms of updating electronics. They're talking about using old cards and things instead of being brand new. I don't know why. I worked for the FAA for a year and I quit because they were so goofed up. I just could not accept that. And so, you know, that's my experience. And that was in 2015. That was years ago they were goofed up. So it's been a huge problem. It should have been fixed many, many years ago. And now, you know, it's exploding in their face and they've absolutely got to fix it. And then you can quickly put in the little spin about the coronavirus that stopped the hiring. And so they flatlined hiring. And then when they started it up again, a lot of people don't realize it takes months, if not years, to train FAA controllers. They can't just, you know, hire them and in 10 days they go to work. So you hire them today, they might not be able to work for 6 months.
Wow. And so by pausing the hiring during COVID, when they should have still been, even following protocols, they should have still been hiring individuals, that set them back years, I guess. Is that fair to say, in terms of being able to put competent air traffic controllers in the control tower because of that hiring freeze that happened during the Biden administration?
Absolutely. It set them back for years. And then when they turned it around, people don't realize the training process. You take somebody off the street and want to make them an FAA controller. I don't know if it takes a year. I didn't do that. So when I got a job with the FAA, they wanted to train me for a year, and I had huge experience. So I'm assuming with new air traffic controllers, it takes at least a year to train them. And that's why they just got way behind the power curve.
We're talking to Lieutenant Colonel Alan Bullitt Campbell. He's a retired United States Air Force officer, was also briefly with the FAA. He's also the author of the book, My Life Above the Clouds. I'm going to talk to you about that in just a moment, Colonel Campbell. But I've got a completely off-the-wall question for you, and something that's bothered me for the last 20 years, and that's this. Why do we have to put our phones on airplane mode on the plane in the United States whenever in Europe, when I'm in Europe, we don't have to do that over there? Why do we have to do it over here? And has there ever been one instance of anyone sitting on a plane with their phone out of airplane mode that caused any disruption of any aircraft?
You know, a little bit of guesswork on my part, but I flew airplanes that had over 200 people, and you know there's no way all 200 people are going to turn their phone off. They forget them, they're in the bag or whatever, and I never had a problem that I'm aware of. So I'm going to have to guess and say that I think that was probably overkill from years ago. I turned mine off, you know, whatever reason, save the battery, but I don't think that was a problem. I think that's just one of those things they do.
Well, I'm sorry to catch you off guard, but listen, if I got the chance to talk to you, I'm gonna ask these kind of questions because they impact us when we fly. And I always think, well, what am I doing this for? This is pointless. So, but I'll get off of that. Let's get back to this air traffic control tower situation. So, what's going to have to happen? I mean, this is going to take an investment, isn't it, of both equipment, training, people, resources. This is not a quick fix, is it?
Absolutely not a quick fix. You know, the training of people is probably up to speed, but they're talking about the ancientness of the radios and stuff that they're using, you know, and all the new stuff out there is just incredibly better, more efficient. Even our phones, for crying out loud, are much better than that. So they've got a long ways to go to get this all back up to speed. And they're supposed to have a backup plan up there. You know, if one fails and they go to the backup plan, well, apparently they both failed. And so there's another thing that's got to be fixed. They have to have a way to communicate. Whether you have them on radar is one thing, but if you can't see them, you can't communicate. then the whole thing is just in bad situation. And so it's going to require a big fix. And I'm embarrassed or surprised that it ever was allowed to get that bad.
Well, and when I mentioned training, I guess what I was talking about was if tomorrow, and of course the exercise of determining what needs to be installed technical equipment wise will take a long period of time. That'll take research. But once new systems are put into the air traffic control system, then all of the existing employees are going to have to be retrained on whatever new equipment is placed in the control towers, right?
I suppose so, but I think at the level they are, training them on new equipment won't be that big a deal because they're all real smart people. They have iPhones, they have, you know, real good computers and all that sort of thing. So I think they're up to speed with that. So I think the training at that level will be easy. It's basically fixing the hardware.
Understood. We're talking to Lieutenant Colonel Alan Bullitt Campbell. And Colonel Campbell, you have written a book called My Life Above the Clouds. Tell us a little bit about this book and what prompted you to write this.
Well, it's a long story. I'll keep it short. But my dad wrote a book because he was on the Yorktown in World War II. And he wrote a book called Pilots, Man Your Planes. And it's available on Amazon also. So that was the family tradition. But my life has been so diverse, unique, on top of the list. And I tell everybody, I'm an average person. I was average in high school. I was no superstar at anything. And all of a sudden, I went to the Citadel and my rocket took off. And so I went in the Air Force for 21 years, flew the F-106, flew the F-16, twice the speed of sound, over 50,000 feet, flew for Delta for 37 years. And oh, by the way, I got involved in boat racing.
Oh, my goodness.
Won two national championships and a world championship. So then it's like, okay, I need to write a book to tell kids you can be ordinary, stay off drugs, don't get arrested, don't get pregnant out of wedlock, and look at the things that are available to you in this wonderful country. And then my kick is go for it.
Absolutely. Ordinary people can do extraordinary things. I've got a friend of mine, Colonel, who flew F-18s for the Navy, and he would land these on aircraft carriers. And to this day, I still can't even imagine how a person's flying a plane, there's a bobbing, weaving object in the middle of the ocean, and you land on that sucker doing something close to 200 miles an hour on a little bitty Band-Aid strip in the water. I have no idea how anybody does that. I have no idea how people like you have flown so many aircraft over so many years. I'm in awe, and I thank you for joining us today. Lieutenant Colonel Alan Bullitt Campbell, author of the book My Life Above the Clouds. Colonel, thank you so much for explaining the Newark situation for us right here on the Mark Reardon Show, 97.1 FM Talk. Great to talk to you, sir.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, we're going to come back. I've got lots of other topics to delve into today, including sanctuary cities. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court ruling on transgender service people, whether they can continue to serve or not, and what the Supreme Court said about that. Talk about Antarctica, global warming, and that's just in this hour. So stick around. Brad Young, 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young here on the last segment of the hour. But let not your heart be troubled, my friends. There are two more hours here on the Mark Reardon Show. I wanted to dive into this story because it not only is it relevant, but it's insightful. And let me tell you what I'm talking about. There's going to be a hearing on June 12th. You need to mark your calendar for this. The hearing on Capitol Hill is going to involve Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. I'm assuming food's involved. That's why he's there. Also, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and New York Governor Kathy Hochul. Now, why are they going to be there? Because the House of Representatives, the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, is going to have a hearing on the issue of sanctuary states and sanctuary cities. You remember, I believe it was last year, and this was brilliant. I said at the time, this is a chess move beyond belief. Whenever the governors of Florida, DeSantis, and the governor of Texas were sending illegal immigrants to blue states, Now, people derided that. They said, oh, it's terrible. You're using people as pawns. You're using individuals to make political points. But that's not it at all. Let's just look on the surface. If you are Massachusetts and your position is we are a sanctuary city and you're proud of that, you boast about that, then what's wrong with sending them that which they want to receive? There's nothing wrong with that. It's not political. You're literally giving these states and cities what they want to have. Now, I've got a friend of mine who lives on Martha's Vineyard. There's no, he's actually Obama. He doesn't live very far from where Obama lives right now on Martha's Vineyard. He's obviously very liberal. So last year, I was texting him, and I was texting him, mocking him and making fun of him for the Martha's Vineyard crying and screaming about receiving illegal aliens. And I said, listen, the bottom line is this, isn't it? You're just upset to see immigrants who aren't carrying leaf blowers. And he, you know, he didn't like that comment. But my point wasn't to make fun of people using leaf blowers. I use a leaf blower at my house every week. So I'm fine with that. But my point is this. When you set yourself up as a sanctuary city, you're being sanctimonious or a sanctuary state. And you're trying to say, look how generous we are. Look how full of values we are. This is how righteous we are. I'm going to wear my righteousness as a badge of honor to show that I'm here to help immigrants. And then when you actually send them the immigrants that they're trying to champion, then they start screaming and hollering and yelling. That's what shows the true nature of what they think. Not that they really want to take care of immigrants. They just want to be about the idea of taking care of immigrants without actually doing it. Because when they were actually faced with the prospect of having immigrants, what did they do? They yelled and they screamed and they hollered and they complained. So all of these governors now are going to be called in front of the House of Representatives to testify about their sanctuary cities. From a legal perspective, this is what bothers me about this entire idea. And we just saw this played out in real time in the Milwaukee area in Wisconsin, where this Judge Hannah Dugan was arrested and charged with obstructing immigration agents, and she was concealing an individual protecting an illegal immigrant from being arrested. Now, she was arrested, and she should have been, because right now we hear so much from the left today talking about President Trump saying he thinks he's above the law. And we hear all those on the left champion, no one is above the law. No one is above the law. Well, how about Judge Hannah Dugan in Milwaukee? Is she above the law? Because if you're protesting her arrest, then essentially you're saying yes, that members of the judicial branch are above the law. And the only logical position you can take is I'm in favor of Judge Dugan being arrested if she was actually hiding illegal immigrants. So this is my concern. When you have Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker and Tim Walz and Kathy Hochul right there, and you ask them, do the laws of your state encourage people, immigrants, to hide in your state? What can they say? If you are a sanctuary state, by definition, you're saying you can come and you can hide here if you are an illegal alien. Unfortunately, that violates federal law. Under 8 U.S.C., that's United States Code 1324, Google it if you don't believe me, 8 U.S.C. 1324, it specifically makes it a felony if you harbor an illegal alien, if you conceal an illegal alien, or if you encourage an illegal alien to stay anywhere where they cannot be arrested, you are violating federal law. Here's what it specifically says, and I'm quoting. This is a felony, my friends. Quote, knowing or in reckless disregard of the fact that an alien has come to, entered, or remains in the United States in violation of law, conceals, harbors, or shields from detection, or attempts to conceal, harbor, or shield from detection such alien in any place, including any building or by any means of transportation, unquote. So my question is this. If I were on that committee, I would be asking Governor Pritzker, Governor Walz, Governor Hochul, number one, in any way, shape, form, or manner by your state sanctuary status, are you encouraging any individual who is here illegally to stay in your state? Or are you shielding them from detection in any way? I would ask him that, because if they say yes, then I expect that the FBI should come in, that the Department of Justice should come in and arrest them on the spot in the exact same manner as Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Hannah Dugan was arrested. They should be, because if all of these liberals are saying Donald Trump is not above the law, then how can they themselves be above the law by harboring illegal aliens, by shielding them from prosecution, by basically refusing to cooperate with federal officials? You are, in effect, harboring criminals in your state. And if that's your position, and if your position is no one is above the law, then wouldn't these three governors agree that they either should either jettison their sanctuary state status or face prosecution by the federal government? And if they say anything other than that, they are hypocrites. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon. More on for Sue's News next on The Mark Reardon Show.
Get more at 971talk.com.